Carter Show, and this is Sarah Carter. And if you want to read our stories, you got to go to sarahacarter.com. That is sarahacarter.com. No H on the Sarah, just S-A-R-A-A-Carter.com. And I'm coming to you from Hillsdale College Kirby Center here in Washington, D.C. I'm also a fellow with the Independent Women's Forum. Please check it out. Go to their website, the Independent Women's Forum, where you can stay up to date on, even if you're a man, you could stay up to date on everything that's happening here in Washington and the national issues that affect us most and our families. But today is an important day. And as we know, this has been one of the most trying 3.5 years of a presidency that I think in modern history we have ever seen. President Trump is under a constant barrage of attacks. He is being targeted by the left. All of those around him, those who are his friends, his family, those sources of his, those people inside the West Wing that are close to him, minus the anonymous person somewhere in the administration that is continually targeting him and working with the left and working with those anti-Trumpers, minus that person, they are being targeted as well. And this is really a frightening time in our country. This is a time where we have seen our nation divided like we've never seen before. We have seen the Democratic Party become so vehemently angry at this president for no other reason that they just don't want him here. They don't want him in Washington, D.C. And you know what that means? That means that they don't want you. They want things to be the way they were. They liked it that way. They want to keep it that way. And they are working diligently to remove him from office, impeach him, drive his presidency into a hole. And what's so incredible is that despite everything that is against President Trump, he has been able to do things that other presidents have not been able to do. I mean, he has literally kept his promise to the American people on so many issues, from moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, to the capital, by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, holding Mexico accountable at the border, insisting that we follow the rule of law, He's been tougher on Russia than any previous president. That's a fact. Just look at what happened during the 8 years of President Obama and leading from behind and not holding Russia accountable, not even when Russia went into Crimea and annexed Crimea. And what about supplies, right? What about assistance to Ukraine? Now we're hearing this, you know, at the impeachment hearings, all we're hearing over and over again is, oh, poor Ukraine. You know, they were suffering. We were going to get the money to them, which, by the way, we did. Over $400 million allocated to Ukraine. I think the number's actually somewhere around $600 million. And the Javelin missiles. Think about that. He's actually provided lethal aid to Ukraine. He's sending a message to Russia, folks. He's sending a message to Russia. And that's what's important here. But no, they're dragging him through the mud at these impeachment hearings. We've been watching it all week. And every time a star witness shows up to testify against the president, what do we see? What do we hear? Is that they don't have any direct evidence to implicate him on anything. They did, however, you know, Ambassador Sondland did throw Rudy Giuliani under the bus. And has really pointed the finger at Rudy Giuliani, saying it was mostly Giuliani who he was dealing with. So we don't have a lot of the facts here. But what we do know is that they have no direct evidence that implicates the president on any of this, that the president was going to withhold aid from Ukraine unless they investigated former Vice President Joe Biden and his son. We don't have any evidence of that whatsoever. And by the way, the president is within his purview to investigate whatever he wants or have the government investigate whatever he wants, particularly when it comes to aid. And we do that throughout every presidency. People don't give money to Guatemala, to Mexico, to Pakistan without saying, you know, look, we're going to give you money, but you got to follow the rules and we can't have corruption. But I'm not going to get into all of that right now, because today we have, I mean, we have a huge, full packed day here at the Sarah Carter Show. And I have a breaking story hot off the presses. I've been working on it all week. And today I was able to get it verified that Justice Department Prosecutor John Durham, who has a criminal probe right now into the FBI's origination of their investigation into President Donald Trump's campaign, is now asking people at the Pentagon's Office of Net Assessment, and you're going to remember that, the Office of Net Assessment. Most people don't know about it, but that was the office that contracted and actually paid Stefan Halper. Remember that guy? He was the FBI informant. He was the spy. That is the word that should be used. The spy that was talking to Carter Page, as well as George Papadopoulos, both of whom were working as advisors for President Trump. Carter Page was volunteering. Papadopoulos jumped on board. He was an early advisor in the campaign. And remember, this is Stefan Halper. He approached Carter Page. He befriended Carter Page. He befriended George Papadopoulos. And according to multiple sources, he was collecting information on them. And he was passing that information on to the FBI. And according to a number of sources that I've spoken with, there are recordings. There are recordings that actually exonerate George Papadopoulos as well as Carter Page, who both told Stefan Halper on separate occasions that they were not dealing with the Russians, that they did, that would be treason, is what Papadopoulos said. He said, I just looked at Stefan Halper and told him, I don't know what you're talking about, because I would never work with the Russians on anything like this. I would never ask for Hillary Clinton's emails. It didn't matter, because the FBI took a FISA warrant out on Carter Page, an American citizen, based on now what we believe to be was a failure to report to the FISA court, that's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, all of the information that they had, and actually based on information that they didn't even verify. Remember Christopher Steele? Remember the Christopher Steele salacious dossier that tried to target Carter Page and did target Carter Page and put his name out before the world and made him look like he was colluding with Russia? Oh, but now we know none of that was true. Now we know that Christopher Steele couldn't even prove what was in his own dossier. In fact, Christopher Steele, the former British spy basically said, to the courts in London, look, it wasn't my job to verify what was going on in that dossier. I collected the information and I gave it and I turned it over. Guess what? I turned it over, but I'm not a journalist, so I don't need to verify anything. What? What? When this is the same guy, by the way, foreign. Think about this. Want to talk about foreign interference in an election? All you have to do is look at Christopher Steele. Foreign interference. Joseph Mifsud. Right? Out of Italy, out of the London school. That was another guy that was collecting information, we believe, because now his attorney is telling prosecutors, apparently here in the United States. And he went on the record to say that Joseph Mifsud was actually a Western intelligence asset, which is the reason why John Durham and William Barr both went to Italy to speak privately with Italian intelligence. Which is the reason why John Durham, William Barr are asking questions of our counterparts in London, England, and in Great Britain at MI6, trying to figure out what's going on there with Christopher Steele. Folks, this is getting big. And this criminal probe is huge. It's huge. Because this is the first time in modern history, in modern American politics, that we have seen within our own governmental system this type of operation against a president of the United States. You don't need to like him. You don't need to love President Trump. You don't need to like him at all. You didn't even have to vote for him. But what happened here appears to be the biggest malfeasance our country has ever faced, both inside the Department of Justice as well as the FBI during the Obama administration, and even inside the State Department. I'm telling you, State Department is going to play a pivotal role here, what happened inside the State Department. So basically, my story is this, and I want you to read it at sarahacarter.com. Please go to sarahacarter.com and read this story. It's very, very important. Is that Justice Department Prosecutor John Durham, remember, out of Connecticut, very well respected both sides of the aisle. He held the CIA accountable. He's held other people accountable. He is not doing this for partisan reasons, and neither is William Barr. I want to play a really quick clip here, and then I'm going to give you a big surprise because today we have Sidney Powell, this amazing attorney, this woman of power who I consider now my dear friend and who is defending Michael Flynn. She is his defense attorney, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who I've known for years, and I traveled to Afghanistan while he was there as the head of intelligence for the United States military when I was there, and who has really been put through the ringer, him and his family, as they targeted President Trump. She is going to be here with us today, but first I want to play you this clip. This is William Barr, and William Barr in this clip is at the Federalist Society's National Lawyer Convention. And he talks about the Democratic resistance, the resistance against Trump.
As I've said, the framers fully expected intense pulling and hauling between Congress and the executive. Unfortunately, just in the past few years, we have seen these conflicts take on an entirely new character. Immediately after President Trump won election, opponents inaugurated what they called the resistance, and they rallied around an explicit strategy of using every tool and maneuver to sabotage the functioning of the executive branch and his administration. Now, resistance is the language used to describe insurgency against rule imposed by an occupying military power. It obviously connotes that the government is not legitimate. This is a very dangerous and indeed incendiary notion to import into the politics of a democratic republic.
That's it. What he said should terrify all of us. Think about what is happening here, people. Think about what is happening here. Think about our Constitution, our democratic republic. Just as Attorney General William Barr says, this is a dangerous situation for our country. It has divided us. It has made us work against each other. It has targeted this administration, and it is choking this country. The only people benefiting from this are the Russians, the Chinese, the enemy states, the enemy actors, because while we're eating each other alive, and by the way, none of us are benefiting from what Congress is doing. As they're dragging President Trump through impeachment, guess what's happening? Nothing. Nothing on Capitol Hill. Our lawmakers aren't doing what they're there for. They're supposed to be representing us, taking care of healthcare, looking at our education systems, taking care of our workers, lowering taxes, I hope, and other things that we care about, things that America needs to care about. And one of those is Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, because he's at the apex of all of this. And I truly believe that the FBI's investigation into President Trump actually started with Michael Flynn. They needed to get Michael Flynn out. They needed, and I'm talking about they, I'm talking about John Brennan, I'm talking about James Clapper, I'm talking about those people in those senior level positions in the Obama administration that actually walked and trampled all over our Constitution. And they knew that when Michael Flynn got in to the White House as the national security advisor for President Trump, that he was well equipped to understand what they were doing, and they needed to remove him. And that's why we have Sidney Powell on today, and she's going to be able to explain all of this to us because she is so remarkable. Hi, Sydney. Are you on the line?
I am.
Oh, it's so great to be talking to you. Just for everyone's knowledge out there, you know, Sydney Powell and I often see each other here in Washington, D.C. when she comes to Fox Studios to do shows. And we have known each other for quite a while and have become good friends. So I am so grateful to have her on the podcast today. I know how busy you've been, Sydney. It's been a major roller coaster ride. It's been incredible. I got to tell you, since you've taken over Lieutenant General Michael Flynn's case and have really changed the tide for him, I want to talk to you about the latest developments in Flynn's case. It was huge news in September. It was the motion to compel the Brady material that was unsealed. And that's also at sarahacarter.com. And I want you to talk about that story and the importance of that material going public.
Sure. It was an interesting project to sort it all out and start piecing it together. I mean, I knew from early on, I first heard about the alleged crime, that Flynn was innocent, because I knew how these people operated and none of it made sense. I can kind of read between the lines of certain words they use and the way they do things to see what's going on. And once I got hold of the evidence, it was just stunning. First, I found a text message. Actually, last, I found a text message that the government had not produced to us, in which Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were talking about using the BuzzFeed announcement of the Steele dossier as a pretext to interview some people. Ironically, I had already drafted the brief talking about the entire setup of Flynn and the interview itself being a pretext. And then as I was doing some of the last research for it, I stumbled into that text message that was only reported by CNN and otherwise buried, but they reported the full text of it.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And for everybody out there, remember, Peter Strzok was the FBI special agent that was charged with investigating President Trump and his campaign. And Lisa Page was the FBI attorney who was his lover at the time, and also working directly with Andrew McCabe, who was fired. Remember the deputy director of the FBI who was fired? This discovery, Sydney, I mean, it was huge. When you think about where that information came from and how it got into that story, can you explain?
Well, of course, you know, BuzzFeed was sitting on the dossier. People had it the Steele dossier for a long time, and was looking for a news hook. CNN was too, to explode it into the news. Comey provided that for them, and along with Clapper and Brennan, frankly, after a meeting in the Oval Office with President Obama and Susan Rice and Joe Biden on January 5th, according to Comey's memo, you know, his first memo to his file that I called Dear Diary, where he, you know, runs to the car and writes down whatever he wants to write down to try to hang the incoming president with. So that busts into the news on January 10. He briefed President Trump on only the salacious aspects of it on January 6. And then, of course, we think Clapper leaked it to the media. As news of the salacious and unverified allegations of the Steele dossier exploded in the media, Peter Strzok writes to Lisa Page, sitting with Bill, meaning Priestep, who was head of counterintelligence for FBI, watching CNN, a ton more out. We're discussing whether, now that this is out, we can use it as a pretext to go interview some people. And the government...
So basically they used information. Basically they used information that they gave to reporters that was from the same batch of information that they had that was never verified, and used it as a second piece of evidence.
Exactly. Used it as a pretext to, quote, go interview some people. And of course, within 2 weeks of that, they interviewed General Flynn in what was in a complete setup. I also learned that there were many meetings between Strzok and McCabe to discuss whether to interview National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and what interview strategies to use. They literally planned and discussed that interview at length. And then the day before the interview, the upper echelon of the FBI met to orchestrate and plan the entire interview strategy. That was McCabe, General Counsel Baker, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, David Bowditch, who is now Deputy Director of the FBI, Trish Anderson, and Jen Boone, strategized to talk to him in such a way as to keep from alerting him from understanding that he was being interviewed in a criminal investigation of which he was the target. And they knew they had no basis for an investigation whatsoever.
Well, and the thing was, they went to the White House. This is what's so incredible to me. Comey bragged about it. You just said that. He bragged about how they basically tricked him into this interview. They go to the White House on this different pretext. They go in there, and I'm talking Peter Strzok and Joe Pienka, by the way. They go in, they interview General Michael Flynn. He's talking to them cordially and has no idea until partway through the interview that they're actually interviewing him as a target of an investigation.
He didn't know that the whole time. They deliberately decided not to tell him their true purpose or to give him 1001 warnings so as to, quote, keep him relaxed. They wanted him relaxed and comfortable. They deliberately decided not to show him what he had actually said from the transcripts of the calls that they had or to confront him directly if he didn't remember something. The most they were willing to do was use some of the words he had used to try to refresh his recollection, but without telling him it was words he had used.
So, Sydney, now that Michael Flynn has been through all of this, I mean, had to change attorneys, went from Robert Kellner, went to you. He's been through such an enormous strain, he and his family. Where do you go from here? I mean, we see that the courts, you know, have now, that this Brady material has been unsealed. We know that based on all of the stories that have been reported over the last several years, Flynn was not lying to the FBI. Maybe that's something you can talk about during that interview. Let me play a clip really quick. I want to play this clip of President Trump, actually. He is discussing, this is when he discussed Flynn in 2017, February 2017.
Mike Flynn is a fine person, and I asked for his resignation. He respectfully gave it. He is a man who there was a certain amount of information given to Vice President Pence, who's with us today. And I was not happy with the way that information was given. He didn't have to do that because what he did wasn't wrong, what he did in terms of the information. When I looked at the information, I said, I don't think he did anything wrong. If anything, he did something right. He was coming into office. He looked at the information. He said, huh, that's fine. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be, and he didn't just call Russia. He called and spoke to both ways. I think there were 30 some odd countries. He's doing the job. You know, he was just doing his job. The thing is, he didn't tell our vice president properly, and then he said he didn't remember. So either way, it wasn't very satisfactory to me.
So you heard the president there, Sydney. And this was in 2017. So much has come out since then. And we know now, based on evidence, based on testimony provided by people, based on the FBI itself, that the FBI agents didn't even think he was lying.
So, exactly.
So what's going on here?
He was set up for the interview, and then he was framed. We found substantial modifications of the FBI's 302, their report of the interview, that were made particularly between the nights of February 10 and February 11, which is right before Flynn left the White House. That's also when the news broke. They had briefed Mr. Vice President Pence, and the news broke that Flynn had told him something different. They made a huge deal out of that. The media pile-on was enormous. And frankly, I think the original interview of Vice President Pence, when he said Flynn had not discussed sanctions with him, was part of the setup, too. The vice president simply should have said whatever occurred on that phone call is classified, and it was a crime to leak that transcript. He should not have addressed the conversation at all. And if he hadn't, none of this would have happened.
Right, right. And that's something that a lot of people don't bring up. That's something that a lot of people don't talk about, and something that I've heard many times that had Vice President Mike Pence addressed it in a different fashion, none of this would have happened. Because according to sources that I've spoken with, even within the FBI that have talked to me, and former FBI officials as well as current, you know, it was such a strange turn of events. Because the fact that the FBI didn't believe he was intentionally lying, but yet pursued, and talk a little bit about that if you can, they really strong-armed Mike Flynn into basically pleading guilty to the one count of lying, because they were targeting his family. They were targeting, I mean, this is what we've been hearing, right?
Right. Yes, that's in all our briefing too, which is also available on my website, sydneypowell.com. No, the agents reported back that his demeanor was sure and they believed he was telling the truth, or he believed he was telling the truth, which is what the truth is. To the best of your recollection, you tell people what you honestly remember. He had had 30 phone calls with different countries in the span of 24 hours or less, not to mention all the other countries that were calling and he was talking to about other things every day. I mean, he was working 20-hour days, getting a 1 or 2 hour nap for sleep at night with the incoming administration and everything that was going on. It was nuts. And what he told Vice President Pence was consistent with what he told the FBI. It's what he remembered at the time.
But nobody ever really addresses that issue. And I think it's because it's the vice president, because nobody knows how to handle that. Right.
Well, right. But, you know, whoever is sitting in that chair and gets that question should have responded that information is classified. I'm not discussing it.
And that's been a huge problem. Here's another issue. Stefan Halper, you know, I broke a story today, and it basically shows that the Department of Justice has expanded its criminal probe into how the FBI, this is all about that criminal probe, right? This is all about investigating President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, which I believe, Sydney, began with Michael Flynn much earlier. That's my assessment based on all of the work I've done over the last 3 years. I believe Flynn was the primary target at the very beginning. Of course, President Trump being the primary target, but Flynn being the most important one that they wanted to remove. They needed to remove him as the national security advisor, they being John Brennan, James Clapper, Comey, and all of these folks, because they would have seen what was going on. Flynn was very well aware of the intelligence community, very well aware of how the intelligence community operated, and he would have been the best person in that position to actually uncover what I believe is extraordinary malfeasance. Now we know that John Durham's expanded this investigation, which is on my website, at the story that's out there right now, has expanded it actually into the Office of Net Assessment at the Pentagon.
Well, that's appropriate, because they were running Stefan Halper. They had essentially a black op going through some kind of slush fund there on behalf of the FBI and CIA, giving Stefan Halper scads of money to do CIA and FBI bidding instead of the net assessment reports that were supposed to have really been done. In fact, the Office of Net Assessment hasn't done a valid net assessment in over a decade.
That's right. And they paid Stefan Halper somewhere over $400,000 is what we believe.
I think it's over $1 million.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was $400,000 in the original documents at that one time. But you're right. Overall, he has made over $1 million at the Office of Net Assessment. And some of that money was used, we believe, to lure George Papadopoulos to London to help him write some reports. And this is kind of how this office was set up and how they utilized Stefan Halper, who we know has a long history as well with the CIA, right?
Right.
And one of the questions And one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about Svetlana Lakova, because she comes right into this. And I've spoken to her numerous times over the past week. And how they targeted her, and in a sense to target General Michael Flynn with lies that were in the media. Now she's suing to try to hold people accountable who put those lies out there about her, basically essentially saying that she was a Russian spy and that she had had an affair with General Mike Flynn, which we all know now is not true. But Stefan Halper was at the center of that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, Halper ran a huge smear job on Flynn in early 2016 to coincide with everything else. I mean, it was a massive coordinated assault on him to get him out. Halper was a large part of that.
Where do we go from here, Sydney? Where do we go from here?
Well, my motion is pending in front of Judge Sullivan right now. I'm expecting an order from him literally any minute. And hopefully he will grant our motion to compel the government to produce additional Brady evidence. We've asked for unredacted versions of the things they've given us with heavy redactions, including the notes of the agents who interviewed Flynn and the 302s. They've redacted scads of stuff from many things. We've also asked for full copies of things they have only given us 2- and 3-line summaries of, because as people can tell from reading my book, License to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice from 2014, you can see that the government specializes in misleading and false summaries, and that doesn't meet the definition of Brady evidence. You're supposed to have the actual evidence. The government's response to our motion was completely lame. They have simply hammered his 2 pleas of guilty, one of which was completely uninformed, and the second one was unexpected. He thought he was going to a sentencing with a counsel who, as it turns out, was conflicted because they're the ones who actually did the FARA filing.
Right, so, and that was Robert Kellner.
Yeah, there are countless reasons that the plea doesn't have any effect on the obligation to produce Brady evidence, not the least of which is that Judge Sullivan issues a standing Brady order that the government didn't even bother to take note of until 3 months after the original plea had been entered, and then just started dribbling out little things here and there.
What's the best case scenario for Mike Flynn? What's the best case scenario for the Lieutenant General?
My goal is to have the entire prosecution dismissed for egregious government misconduct. And frankly, if the government had any sense, they'd come in and do it already. And certainly if they had any integrity, they'd run in and do it already. If they wait until Sullivan orders the production of more evidence, it's going to look really bad for them.
Do you think they'll do that?
I don't know. Mr. Van Brack seems quite dug in, but Sullivan has a way of handing people's careers to them, so to speak. And hopefully he's going to do that with Mr. Van Grack.
Well, I tell you, Sydney, this is going to be huge. I mean, once he makes a decision, whether Sullivan eventually decides to throw this case completely out, which would be the best case scenario. I mean, maybe I should ask you right before we get off, what's the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario, I guess, would be that he completely denied our motion to compel production of new evidence. But that would be inconsistent with the law, inconsistent with his history, inconsistent with things he said in court already, including reminding the government on the record that his Brady order took precedence over the guilty plea. I mean, he's already said that to them in their face on the record. And they still came back and simply said, well, you know, their theory of the case is that they didn't have to produce Brady evidence before he was charged because he wasn't a defendant. And then they didn't have to produce it after that because he pled guilty, which, you know, all happened on the same day because it was a railroad operation. They threatened to indict his son. They threatened to indict him the very next day and give him the Manafort treatment. I mean, it was the most expeditious railroading operation you've ever seen. And I'm convinced that's because they knew that the evidence of the Page Strzok text messages and affair was going to blow in the media the very next day, which it did. The day after Flynn entered his guilty plea in front of Judge Contreras, who, by the way, then had to recuse himself after he accepted it because he's named in the Page Strzok text messages as a big buddy of Peter Strzok. I mean, you just can't even make this stuff up. People need to read the briefs that we filed. The 2 most important ones are the reply to the motion to compel and the sir reply. They're only about 45 pages total, and they tell the story that's easy enough for people to read.
Where can people read that? On your website? I know some of them are attached to my stories, but tell everyone your website again. Please go on Sydney's website and please order her book too. It's incredible. It's an eye-opener about how the justice system really works and why great lawyers like Sydney Powell are able to navigate such treacherous waters. What's your website again, Sydney?
It's sydneypowell.com, SIDNEYPOWELL.
You guys heard it here first at sydneypowell.com. Remember, this is happening right now. This is a fluid situation. Sydney Powell has been working diligently. Sydney, does Mike Flynn have a defense fund? What's going on that? I know he's spent millions of dollars. Where can people go if they want to donate to his defense fund?
That would be great. It's MikeFlynnDefenseFund.org. It's on my website, too, and people can sign up for updates on my website on the Flynn case and what's going on, and including we do a mail out about every 2 or 3 weeks on that by email, and there's a link to click on to donate to the defense fund on that, too.
Please, everyone, do it. I mean, look, Flynn he had to sell his home. He's in debt. He and his family have been run through the ringer. The government has the pockets, right? The deep pockets, never-ending pockets. We don't. We're regular people. Imagine trying to defend yourself against these lies and against this type of situation. Put yourself in his shoes. Get out there. Help him out, even if it's just with emotional support. Watch this case. Watch what Sydney Powell can do. She is amazing. I know you're giving him 1,000% of yourself, Sydney. If there was anybody in the world I would want defending me, it would be you. And people, she is brilliant. Read her book. Thank you so much, Sydney, for being on with us today. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, for having me. I'm a huge fan. You know that.
Oh, I'm the fan. I'm the fan here, folks. Thank you, Sydney. I'll let you go so you can get back to work. Go defend Fred.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So just like I said to Sydney Powell, wasn't she amazing, guys, just listening to her, the way she can explain things? She has been working so hard. I can't even begin to tell you. There's some nights the woman doesn't even sleep. She's going through thousands of documents and working. I mean, I would want her to represent me. That's what a defense attorney should do. She's getting to the bottom of it. She's looking at every aspect of this situation, which, by the way, we've never seen anything like this before, right? We've never seen anything like this. And I want to play a clip here before I wrap up this podcast with you today and here at the Sarah Carter Show. I want to play a clip here of what Lieutenant General Michael Flynn is up against, the type of people that he has to deal with every single day since they've brought these erroneous charges against him by special counsel Robert Mueller, who, by the way, couldn't find anything on collusion, just tried to put some notches on their belts there, Andrew Weissman and Robert Mueller. I want to play a clip of somebody you will recognize, former CIA director John Brennan, and his statements about General Mike Flynn.
Well, you would think that he would know the facts that he is being asked about, and therefore, for what reason would he not tell the truth? It's still quite confounding. I know there's a lot that goes on in the first few weeks of administration, but for something like this, I think Mike just made a very, very serious mistake. He realizes it. He's paying for it dearly. But there should have been no excuse, and there is no excuse, for a national security advisor to lie to FBI agents who pay him a visit at the White House.
He wasn't lying. Even the FBI said he wasn't lying. Think about what they did to this war hero, to this man who served his country, would leave his family, would leave his wife, his son, and go overseas and put himself in the middle of a war zone. He was the kind of man, and he still is, by the way, a lieutenant general that when I would talk to soldiers, they would say, man, Mike Flynn was out here on the battlefield with us. He was asking us how we were doing. He was talking to us. He was involved. He cared. He wanted to get sources and resources for the boots on the ground for our soldiers out in harm's way so that they could be protected. But I want to tell you something else that I heard in that clip with John Brennan. He talks about the first 2 weeks being a little bit confusing. Doesn't that sound like somebody else, like the first few weeks of an administration can be tough? Doesn't that sound a lot like what James Comey was saying, that they caught him off guard? You know what? I'm just speculating here. I have no proof of this, although I did talk to sources who did see Comey, by the way, Brennan and Clapper hanging out in an Italian restaurant in Virginia early on during this. Can't prove what they were talking about, but they're pretty good friends since they're all eating Italian food at a restaurant in Virginia. I won't name the city. But doesn't it sound a lot like what Comey said? Doesn't it sound like there was a little bit of collusion going on there? I mean, they both said the same thing. They caught him off guard. You know, remember Comey, that the presidency was kind of in disarray at the beginning. He would have never done that to another president. And here you have John Brennan kind of saying the same thing. I don't know. I just find that kind of odd. And when you know how these people operate, it makes you think twice about everything that they say. You know, I have been so excited to be with you here today. I'm so happy I had Sidney Powell on to explain what's happening in Lieutenant General Michael Flynn's case. She really is, like Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, is a hero to me and a hero to the American people. She is a hero to our republic, our democratic way of life. And this is why we're so lucky we still live in a nation where we can fight back, folks, but only if the American public cares, only if we care enough to hold our elected officials accountable, hold them responsible, and tell the truth. That's why I hope John Durham is getting to the bottom of this mess. That's why I believe in my heart that Attorney General William Barr is doing the right thing. And that's why I believe in you, the American people. And I will be here every week fighting for justice, bringing you the stories that you're not hearing anywhere else here at sarahacarter.com and The Sarah Carter Show. Thank you so much for joining me from Hillsdale College Kirby Center in Washington, D.C., and I will see you again next week. Thank you so much.